Welcome to the Hidden Potential Podcast. I'm your host, Homer Hargrove. And in today's episode, we have a unique recording in which I'm going to be sharing my thoughts on Driscoll and the Stronger Men's Conference and the debacle that happened recently. And I'm going to be sharing my thoughts from the perspective of a leader, as a professional speaker, and also as a church leader. And I'm going to be sharing my thoughts on it because I feel like it will help gauge that conversation for yourself as other like-minded leaders in handling these kinds of somewhat weird situations and how to, in a sense, fit them in our perspectives, fit them in our worldviews, and be able to come with a rational conclusion. Because while this was a big scene that made like public outcry in the Christian world, it's stuff that happens on a smaller scale all the time. And I think that it's very appropriate for us to learn how to be professional and spiritual at the same time. So again, this is a unique episode. I'm not going to have any takeaway today at the end. It's just something for us to consider and share my thoughts on. So number one, to get started, the event that happened, I'm not going to go all into it, but pretty much this guy Driscoll, it was invited to a big men's conference, not like a little men's conference. It was a big men's conference, thousands of people were there. And it had all the lights, all the shows. And one of the attractions that they made at this event, which clearly bothered Driscoll, was that they had a man that had like this act in which he like swallowed a sword and he climbed up a pole, like this huge pole in the room with his sword like in his mouth, in his body, and like does this like stunt to where it's like death-defying stunts and stuff like that. And so when Driscoll takes stage after that event, he pretty much starts saying that, accusing the spiritual leaders of letting in the spirit of Jezebel, and that it polluted all of the people there, and it was, you know, made it, he made this accusation, this assertion that there's a in a sense like demonic spiritual activity that was allowed in the conference. And while he was still saying those things, again, this is accusations against the event planners and the church leaders that are holding the conference that he was invited to. And while he was in the midst of still talking about those things and making his assertion, the lead pastor of that conference said, "You're done," and asked him to come off stage, in which he did. And so it's like a very public moment, and people have been talking about whether he was in the right or in the wrong, if the church was in the right or the wrong, and trying to decipher of, well, what this and that, and kind of like the morality of it and the principles of it. So today I'm really going to just hit three major aspects I think that are necessary to look at when trying to make a decision for yourself. Again, this is not just about this so that we can feel superior and think like, well, I have an opinion on that. This kind of stuff happens all the time on a smaller scale. As a small slight for me, I was invited to speak when I was, you know, very early on in ministry at this youth conference. Great. I killed it. It was a great message. All these kids ended up giving their life to Christ and coming up to the altar for prayer. And while I was praying for them, I started speaking in tongues. And I was not raised in church, so I didn't necessarily know the rules or not. I was at a Methodist church where they don't believe in that. And so I was tapped on the shoulder and asked to stop praying in tongues. And so it may not seem like as big of a deal as this event, but it's like there's so many micro instances of that throughout churches to where you have to learn how to navigate these things in a professional way while still being spiritual. And so that's why we're talking about this. So going into it, the first thing that I would say, and as a baseline, I'm going to just flat out say it. I think that Driscoll was in the wrong on this issue. And I'm going to list out why. One is that it was unprofessional. You got to understand that, yes, the church as a whole is a spiritual body, but each church individually is an organizational body. Like, it is both spiritual and of this world. And the simple professionalism of being invited to a conference, you're being invited to speak at this place, and in that single swoop, he started casting stones at the very people that invited him to speak there. And it the accusations he's making are pretty messed, like those are pretty severe. He's pretty much calling all of the leadership unspiritual. He's calling, making those kinds of claims can easily turn into false teachers. Like it was so much weight. Again, being a keynote speaker and making these claims about the heads of the leadership, and that fatal swoop, he also made himself out to be more superior than the dozens and dozens of people that went about planning this event, that went about praying for this event, fasting for this event. I don't know if you've ever been about a part of a church conference planning committee, but there's usually a lot of spiritual things that go into it. Like people are praying and fasting for this event. They're having spiritual conversations about it. And so in this claim that he's making himself out to be superior than dozens of other people that have prepared for this event. And you talk about months and months, if not even over a year of planning. And it was simply unprofessional. Could you imagine getting invited to, if I got invited to this Methodist church, I'm praying for people. I did a good job. People were connecting spiritually to what I was saying. I had an altar call and people gave their life to Christ. It was a great outcome. But when I was tapped on the shoulder and asked to stop praying in tongues, I could be professional enough to where I'm still praying for people. I didn't stop praying for people. But I can withhold myself from speaking in tongues. You know, I can withhold myself. And I, just like the Bible says, I'm in control of my mouth. I am in control of my body. And I can be respectful while still ministering. And in fact, I'm able to minister even more when I keep that sense of professionalism. But if I were to behave like this guy Driscoll, they would have clearly asked me to leave. Or stop what I was doing, stop praying for people. But I was able to continue praying for people because I was respectful enough to the leadership house that I was a part of. And I could pull a bunch of like biblical references of how we ought to honor the spiritual heads of a church body, of a house. And so there's a lot of that. But at the end of the day, I feel like it's not necessary when you just simplify it to it was unprofessional. It was unprofessional. And if you want to be taken seriously as a minister, as even as a Christian, you have to learn how to be professional as you work with others. I go to recovery centers all the time on a weekly basis, and I could easily excuse myself from certain aspects of professionalism, but it would and say that it's because of spiritual right that I'm doing this. But I would end up getting kicked out of these places. When I was going into public schools, I would definitely have gotten kicked out of places if I wasn't professional enough. There's no way that you're able to operate in the secular world as a Christian effectively without being professional. And we have to have that same kind of professionalism when we go from church to church. It's simply that. That should be a baseline to where what he did was inappropriate. Number two, the accusations that he was making were relative. His accusations is that this man swallowing the sword and climbing up the pole was equivalent to that of a stripper, and that he brought in the spirit of Jezebel, and that it just was really just unlocking this lustful spirit in the room. And when you hear the claims, it's like, well, I guess that makes sense. When you actually look at the video, it was a circus act. It wasn't no stripper pole. It's like this big, thick, like pole that went all the way to the ceiling. It was like ridiculously high. And it looked like I was watching something from the circus. It didn't look like this provocative striptease. It was just like this death-defying circus leap. And at the end of the day, if you were to still hold that, well, it still had aspects of this or that. You have to understand that those accusations are relative. He's saying that this is the spirit of Jezebel, but why not say that about the monster truck show? Like they had a monster truck show there too. And he didn't say, oh, they brought in the spirit of the beast. Like there's monster trucks that have their names like the beast. We brought in the spirit of destruction. You know, do you see what I'm saying? Like these accusations could be said about anything. Those kinds of accusations are relative based on your opinion. You know, you if you want to go that route, well, then I can continue saying that, well, you used a MacBook during your sermon prep, or you used an Apple product as part of your notes. And that brought in the spirit of the Antichrist because they have so many anti-Christian values. You know, I could go on and you're wearing a Nike brand. You are now bringing in the spirit of the Antichrist. You're bringing the spirit of X, Y, or Z. You can throw those names on just about anything that is connected to anything else. It is relative. And at the end of the day, you gotta really just like think for yourself and consider the weight to those accusations. And if they're so relative that you could say it about anything, like football, y'all did a football game inside the church, you brought the spirit of idol worship, the desire for fame and fortune into this place. You brought a spirit of violence into this place. It's relative, meaning that it's like this slippery slope that you can continue to go down that route. And whenever you have that kind of accusation against another leader, they're able to have four fingers pointing back at yourself. Just like you said, cast the first stone, whoever hasn't said. There's just no way to have those kinds of accusations unless it's clear and blatant sin, which it wasn't. It wasn't clear and blatant sin. It's a circus act. And the final thing that I want to hit on is that there's different people that are saying, okay, well, it wasn't really that bad, but was any of this even necessary? Was it necessary to have this guy do this performance? And you have to understand that the whole conference isn't necessary. That the goal of creating a Christian conference isn't determining whether or not it's necessary. It's an event that they were inspired to do. Is it necessary? No, none of it is necessary. Think about all the things that churches do and ask yourself, is this necessary? No, even the aspect of Sunday service, is it necessary? No, we're all able to be saved independently of needing to go to church. Look at the people that aren't able to go to church in China and other places. It is not a necessity. But can it be supplemental? Yes. And when you're creating an event like that, part of event creation is creating hype, of making this memorable experience. It doesn't necessarily matter if it's extremely spiritual or not. There's natural, normal planning exercises that go into event. Think about a normal worship service that changes the lights, that even if there's not a big show on stage, they dim the lights. Well, is that necessary? No. It's just, it could be helpful. Is there a fog machine at your church? Is that necessary? Well, no. You see, you could go down the book. Having slides on the screen, is that necessary? It kind of goes back to the idea of it being a slippery slope. The necessity isn't a requirement for these types of events. It's the idea of how can we make this a memorable event? How can we make this an event that people want to go to? How can we hype this up? And the idea that like it's a hype team that's creating these different things in the background, and they're trying to make a showstopper. They're trying to make it an experience that is memorable to go to, and on top of all of the edifying and spiritual things that happen during the event, they're still trying to entice other people to go. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong to doing marketing for your church. It's not about whether it's necessary. That shouldn't be the requirement to do anything. That's the bare minimum. The bare minimum of leadership thinking is like, well, is this necessary? It's can this advance our mission? Can this advance what we want to happen? And if the answer is yes, then it's something to consider. I hope that makes sense what I'm saying. So the three things that we talked about is the idea that what he did was unprofessional, and we as leaders should examine ourselves and our professionalism and how we deal with other ministers, other churches, and especially secular places that allow us to go to their places. Number two, the accusations are relative. We all want to be spiritual, but the idea of being biblically spiritual isn't just going down the slippery slope and accusing other people. And I would go as far to say that most ministers that spend their time accusing everybody else, that it's somewhat unproductive. Like it's not a great thing to constantly try to divide the church into smaller factions of people who follow you versus someone else. The church is the one place that's supposed to be united. The division that happens for us is all around us. You don't have to look very far to find divisiveness in this world. Most people in their own families, when they convert to Christianity, they have that divide and they don't have any other unity except for in the church. And so when people are constantly trying to divide the church, I would question that. I would not be quick to throw the finger, throw shade at other ministers when they're bringing others to Christ, when they're unifying the body. So again, sorry for the tangent, but the accusations were relative. And number three, the idea of it being a necessity. Necessity is not a requirement to having an event. It's simply not. And so it doesn't matter if it was necessary or not. They can do whatever they feel led to do. Whatever they want to do, they have the freedom to do that. And they don't have to confine their planning process or what they want to do at their event to everybody and their mother, especially a guest speaker that they invited and paid to be there, who accepted the money to be there, who knew where he was going. It's not like they asked him a day before, and he's like, yeah, I guess I'll go. There's months of invite, if not more than that, of knowing what he's a part of and knowing all the things that go into it. And so, again, I hope that what I shared today was helpful for you. And it's okay if you disagree with me. You're entitled to that. You have the freedom of choice to disagree with me. These are simply my thoughts on it. And I think that if we're able to have reasonable conversation about things like this within the church, but especially in leadership community, we're able to better grow ourselves because we can look at this and it helps us to make better decisions for when we get into a micro situation as this, to where it helps us to make better choices, better decisions, so that people in the world don't think that we're these psychopaths that just fight and devour one another like it looked like for this scene. We should not be attacking one another, but we should be building each other up. So again, I hope that this message, this episode was meaningful for you. I hope that it was edifying for your leadership. Could you do me a favor? Could you leave a rating and review for this podcast? It would really help me out, help others be able to see this show in their feed. Until next time, have a great life.